welcome to the Managing Violence Podcast, the internet's leading free resource on violence prevention, threat assessment, personal security, and self-protection, brought to you by R2S Violence Prevention. We are hashtag for the protectors. I'm your host, Joe Saunders. Ho ho, Merry Christmas, Blessed Solstice, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, however you're celebrating this month, all the best of season's greetings and love and prosperity and peace to all of my listeners for the Managing Violence Podcast. It is so good to be back and recording a few episodes. We've got a bunch coming out in short succession. It is so good to have a little bit of time up my sleeve. It has been a massive year, but what better gift could I give than further content from some of the world's leading experts and some great conversations around a topic that we all, hopefully, are interested in. You know, as I reflect upon this year, I have so much to be grateful for this audience, for everything this podcast has opened the door for me. From teaching in the UK and Switzerland at the beginning of the year, with massive thanks to Mary Stevens, Tommy Moore, Tianwana, and Mike and Dave from Self Defense Global for hosting me on that incredible tour, to then speaking on stage in Atlanta at the Global Security Exchange about my work in customer-initiated violence, and the incredible work that my team at Risk to Solution continue to do with some of Australia's largest companies managing the risk of violence for those entities and also for not-for-profits and other groups that are truly at risk. And the work we get to do is so incredibly rewarding. And is really the fulfillment of a lifelong passion for this subject. And I'm just so grateful that I've had the opportunity to do that. And on the other side, of course, I'm still a dad and I've still got four young kids that are keeping me busy. And I've started my MBA this year, which is just another incredible layer of opportunity and growth and stress. So hence the podcast has been a little bit intermittent. But hey, we are here now and I am delighted to bring you another batch of episodes, kicking off today with the one and only Mary Stevens. Now, we've already had Mary on the podcast, so I won't give her full background, but Mary is an incredible karate and violence prevention instructor. And today we're going to be talking about her journey into soft skills, having learned from really some of the world leaders in soft skills and comparing those notes, and also finding out what she's been up to with her projects in India. So without further ado, here is Mary Stevens. All right, I am joined here once again by Mary Stevens. Mary, this is not only the second time we've done an episode of the podcast, but this is actually the second time we've had this conversation, because apparently after 107 or 8 or however many of these I've done and another 20 or so other podcasts and guesting on all the other podcasts, apparently I can still make rookie mistakes and record using the wrong hardware. And I played back our last conversation and I sounded like garbage. So thank you for your flexibility in opting to have this exact same conversation over again. Although, as we just discussed, it'll almost certainly be different. And the other one, I don't know, maybe I'll save the other one for bonus content somewhere down the line if it ends up being remarkably different. But particularly avid enthusiasts of Mary Stevens can acquire that for a price.
they're banging the door down the rest of the time. When the enthusiast group, when can we have more bonus content? So yeah.
That's right. So look, as I said, welcome back on the show. Now, for those of you that need to know all the background of Mary, we've already done an episode about that, so we won't go into a huge amount of detail. But I will say that Mary Stevens is a good friend, good friend of the show. Has been an avid supporter of the show since pretty close to the beginning, hosted me when I was over in the UK earlier this year, not just hosted seminars, but actually put me up in a house, drove me around the UK, did all sorts of things, picked me up from the airport. She's good people, but also just from a martial arts and violence prevention point of view. So, I mean, you're really what I consider to be kind of the salt of the earth of martial arts instructors, that you're a full-time karate coach, in that you teach martial arts to kids as a martial arts system for a whole bunch of purposes beyond just self-protection, and work with a lot of families in your local community doing that. But then you also have Violence Prevention and Management UK with Christopher
teaching at-risk youth and high schools and so on, the actual nitty-gritty of the really a lot of what we're going to talk about today in terms of the soft skills and the prevention and management of violence as opposed to just the self-defense side. And you also stay incredibly busy doing all sorts of seminars, whether it's from Okinawan weaponry through to criminology and all sorts of other weird and wonderful stuff. So as far as a prototype audience of this show, you are pretty much it. So, and I'm sure your bookshelf now reflects that, since you're one of the many that have been afflicted by the curse of having to buy a book of every person I interview. So
I mean, and I really do hold you responsible for my bank balance in that sense, Mr. Saunders.
And not just for flying me to the UK.
yeah, that also. But of course, you know, that's a very kind introduction. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. And let's hope that there's more to be said.
Yeah. And that's not even talking about the things that we talked about in the first episode with what you do with Fair Fight in India and so on, which we'll touch on again towards the end of this episode as well. But the main sort of topic that we sort of fleshed out to talk about in this particular episode, I found it really interesting just in our conversations across the year that over the past sort of year plus a little bit, you've actually had the opportunity to train with four different systems or people or groups or however you want to divide them that are all fairly well renowned for being at the cutting edge of soft skills. So, and when we talk about soft skills, basically anything that's not physical, right? Not the hard hitting, grabbing, choking stuff. So you train with Richard Dimitri and Pam Armitage in Canada. Then you brought me in, and I'm not lumping myself in with the same category, but we did some stuff as well around soft skills. And then not long after that, you had Dr. Temiyard McCracken, who is an alumni of the show as well. And then you also hosted and attended the seminars with Rory Miller towards the end. So that's a pretty incredible array of leaders, I guess, in this particular space, in this skill set. There's only a handful of people worldwide I would consider probably on par with that particular cohort. So I thought it'd be a really cool opportunity for us to kind of just unpack. I know you're a big note taker, to unpack what you took away from each of those experiences, and perhaps sort of what the differences were in the different strategies, the different takes on things. I know we can all sort of be sometimes we go, I don't need to do another de-escalation seminar. I've already done one, but it's obviously different depending on whose perspective you get and the approach and so on. So it's good for people to know who does what and how it differs from each other. But before we get into the specifics of those courses, I'd like to just kind of backtrack in your story a little bit. Again, we won't go into the full story, which in here in the first episode we did together, but just the journey for you from martial artist to then realizing there was this whole non-physical skill set that you probably needed to learn and embark upon that study of soft skills. So just talk us through that realization and journey for you.
Okay. So within the karate that I had been learning for a long period of time, there was always an interaction with self-defense that I didn't fully know how to articulate. For example, you know, we looked at Jeff Thompson's material, we discussed kind of preemption, etc., and that was where sort of self-defense sat within like karate as far as I understood it, and I didn't really have much reason to question it beyond that. But when I started working in India and I saw what was being taught as self-defense inside of karate, I realized that was a really big problem, and that it was something that I needed to educate myself about, which is how I went looking for Jamie Club in the first place, as a cross-training self-protection expert, because I didn't want to be teaching something that was actively endangering people, which I could absolutely see was an issue for some of the instructors that I was working with, particularly in India, where, you know, the women were especially vulnerable, and what they were being taught was especially useless. So I identified that as a problem. And early on in that, Managing Violence podcast was recommended to me as a good source of information. And as I think we've alluded to on the previous podcast, it was like it's like a university opportunity, because you've had so many different self-protection and self-defense experts on there that if you listen to pretty much everybody, you can quickly identify those who whose experience and teaching resonates with what you need. And that's how I came to train with these particular people, I would say, because of realizing that what they were teaching was the stuff that I needed to learn. Because soft skills goes way beyond preemption, and it goes way, way beyond de-escalation as well. But you have to be responsible enough to recognize that, pick it up and do the work.
Yeah. I think there's also, I think sometimes people don't realize how connected the hard skills and the soft skills are, and that they're kind of interdependent in a lot of ways. Like, you need to, I think if you don't have confidence in your hard skills, it's harder to trust your soft skills, or to give yourself the opportunity to explore your soft skills. Because if you're in a state of fear or panic, or I'm not going to be able to get out of this if this goes wrong, I think it's almost irresponsible for you to leave an opportunity to end the situation early for the sake of exploring whether you could de-escalate it or whether you could do something else, right? So like, if I think about when I started practicing my own soft skills and learning my and sort of playing with de-escalation as an idea, like the only reason I was able to get those live reps in front of really sort of angry, hostile people, one was because my job allowed me to, but two, because I also had the confidence in my physical skills that I could, if I screwed it up, which I did on a regular basis, I could still manage to make that situation safe and it would be okay. So that gave me an opportunity to sort of play. But on the same token, I think if you only have hard skills and you don't have soft skills, and one, you're obviously a massive legal liability. But then I think you're also, you enter into this headspace where the old cliche of, you know, if you've only got a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. Like, you start looking at the world through this aggressive lens because that's the only tool you have in your arsenal. So I don't think this is ever an either or. And I think sometimes people get a little bit precious about the idea that I don't need to learn that because that's for therapists. It's like, well, no, you're a human. You should probably have both. And in the same token, like, I know a lot of people that just, I will just talk my way out of everything. I've got the gift of the gab. Well, you should probably also have the other skill sets as well, just in case. So yeah, I think it's both. Yeah.
Yeah. Although I am going to jump in on that and say there's a danger that may be something of a strong male perspective, in that you are talking from the point of view of having like options in that scenario. Whereas one of the main things that I'm, as you know, can drive me mad, is the way that a lot of the self-defense industry will overlook the fact that, you know, it's not purely about, you know, it's about managing violence as opposed to looking for violence. And sometimes, you know, violence will come to you if you're small, if you're old, if you're vulnerable, if you're sick, and, you know, you can have the best hard skills for your size, pound for pound. But if pound for pound, your size is, you know, you're five and you're being pushed around in the playground by a nine-year-old, then your hard skills don't mean shit.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. So I think it's important that we pick the right solution for the problem. And every problem requires different solutions because the context is always going to be different. So let's talk through your incredible year of study. So I believe the first course of the ones we're talking about was we could do a whole podcast on your journey of just getting to Canada and almost ending up in the US, and then managing to turn around and get back to where you're going. But that's probably, maybe we'll put that in the bonus episode of the lost episode as well. But along with the video of me almost crushing you in a sumo demonstration. Yeah, we'll make it a bonus pack. So talk me through your first impressions listening to Pam Armitage on the podcast, and reaching out, and the online training, and then the decision to go over and train with Rich and Pam in Canada.
Okay. At the beginning of that, so yes, when I heard Pam Armitage on your podcast, I was absolutely bewitched by how awesome she is. And from her backstory, obviously another non-martial artist, which I think is sometimes really important because we get stuck into very much our martial arts way of doing things and conflating martial arts and self-protection, self-defense, which is not a thing. Her approach has changed every class that I ever teach every single day. And that's not an exaggeration. because the basis of her trauma-informed teaching practice is so clear and so simple, and so elegantly expressed that you can just absorb it and make it your own. And the idea that trauma-informed practice is only for when you're teaching, you know, a group of abused women in a rape crisis center is just bullshit, because every single person that you have come through your doors, even if you're teaching, Shakespeare, everybody in that room is bringing past experience in there that may or may not be triggered by something that you say or do. You don't know what sights, sounds, smells are going to upset somebody, and what's going to intersect with somebody's past experience to make them feel terrible in your room. And you have to control that space in a way that makes it a safe space as much as you possibly can. I mean, I've made some really big mistakes in that field this year, even after that, and in the past, because of the nature of the subject matter that we teach. And I'm learning about that all the time. But yeah, so coming across Pam on your pod was like, yeah, she's amazing. This is great material. And I connected with her and with Richard online. And I obviously then followed up on Richard as well, because they do come as a pair, Team Diametry, and they very much influence each other and have evolved together. Richard, as I know, I've said to you before, I think is the most misunderstood man in the whole of the self-defense world. His journey is just incredible. And although he's still a man, he's not the man that he was, and that perhaps his reputation kind of suggests. And the fact that he has this phenomenal close quarter self-defense system, which is highly effective, is just a tiny part of what he does. It's not the whole picture. And people don't really understand that. And they should. So I did a bunch of stuff with them online, hosted them for a couple of seminars and attended as many of theirs as I could to get to know more about them. And we built up a good relationship, which resulted in me going to their 5-day masterclass in Montreal last year, which was incredible. And it's really good that they're taking that out now, and they're doing it in Australia, they're doing it in Germany, and they did it in the UK this year as well, which would have been significantly less travel. But, you know, I absolutely loved going to Canada and learning from them there. And as you say, it had its adventures, but it was very, very cool. So yeah, that was how all of that came about.
Yeah. So look, obviously we can't really do justice to, was it 4 days? Four days live in.
Five days.
Five days live in literally around the kitchen table,
yep.
Full days of knowledge transfer, practice, all that kind of stuff. So to give a 10-minute snapshot is probably not even remotely fair. But I would like to ask, given the research and the training you've already done, and I guess probably reflecting forward on the training you would do moving ahead, what were the things that you found were particularly strong or differentiators with Rich and Pam's material that stand out to you now as being these guys were the best at this particular thing, or the things that were sort of the most profound for you?
Okay. Again, I that is a very tricky question because it's so very integrated. But I think Rich's premise that social violence is 10 out of 10 de-escalatable is a very bold statement. And he absolutely stands by that very, very effectively. And it's a kind of thing that when I've discussed it with other people, they're like, no, absolutely disagree. I really enjoy those discussions because they can go very, very deep. And this is part of why I go on about, you know, the timeline of soft skills. Because, you know, by the time somebody's like right in your face, screaming, "I'm gonna kill you, motherfucker," you may potentially have missed your window of opportunity. And what's really super important for particularly for vulnerable populations is to go back along the timeline and see at what point did they have a choice that was going to be effective. And for me, a lot of the students that I work with, there's a lot of power dynamics in there because we're talking about workplaces. We're talking about low powered positions. We're talking about, you know, in India, the caste system. We're talking about a Muslim girl, standing up against a boy of significantly higher social status. in a very patriarchal society. So you have to understand the psychology and the dynamics and the dialogue and the like context and who you can connect with and who you can't. So early recognition of relationship dynamics and understanding physical body language in a like broader sense, not necessarily in the I'm gonna kill you motherfucker kind of range, is so important and so overlooked. And when people have their kind of token, we train de-escalation. Do you just train the fence though? Is that what you're training? You know, because really you're looking for justification to hit. You are not managing violence. You're looking for violence. You're, you know, seeking to justify it, what happens legally, but you're not considering how to avoid. And that's one of Rich's like phenomenal strengths, as well as, you know, managing for those people, the successful close range, like extrication from a situation.
I know one of the other things we talked about as well was the amount of context that was placed in the drills, especially as you all got to know each other and trying to find each other's triggers. And as one of the things that when I first started training with Rich, I found was really cool, and but also like uncomfortable, was like really being pushed emotionally, not just physically, not just in terms of mentally of trying to remember things, but to actually uncover your own emotional baggage that's going to make you overreact. That's really cool as well. So just talk about that experience.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We alluded to that briefly when we had this failed conversation in which apparently you were garbage. So
That's fair. Yeah. My using my own words against me, but that's, I think context was slightly different, but that's fine.
Just to go into that a little bit more, you know, because again, people criticize scenario training as being false and unrealistic. And one of the things that Rich is obviously a very people watching person. And so very gradually, as you build up a relationship of trust, you can go a lot deeper in those scenarios. And so when we're looking for, you know, scenario briefs where you have to detect if it's social or antisocial violence, you have to understand whether it's escalatable or de-escalatable in that particular context that you've been given. And we found ourselves he was giving us scenarios that were very real to our own lives, which made it very authentic. And there was one, I think, Tremaine probably wouldn't mind me explaining this one. So I was doing some scenario with Tremaine Kent, who is a super awesome guy. And Tremaine, now happily remarried and you know, a long way on from a very tragic time in his life, but he lost his wife to cancer, I believe, you know, several years ago. And within the scenario that we were doing, he was playing the part of someone that was like slightly mentally disturbed, and he was being far too close. I was a shop assistant and he was threatening me, but he wasn't intending to threaten me. And he was much too close, but it was one of those situations in which I was having to try and extract whether there was any evil intent or not. And just in the course of the dialogue, he was talking, you know, you remind me of my wife, something like that had come out. And I was like, oh, tell me about your wife. And he looked at me and he was like, she died. And I was like, oh my God. It was a really, really powerful moment. Even though, you know, we were safe enough to go there in lots of different ways and to be able to use the emotions and the body language that were very real to like creating scenarios in which we really had to be able to disentangle and read the other person quite effectively. So I'd say that's another Rich kind of speciality for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, if there's any meowing or purring noises that if you're listening to the audio and you can't see that there are now cats involved in the conversation, that would be probably very confusing for you on audio only. So unless you know Mary, in which case it's not at all confusing. just thought I'd flag that for anyone who was suddenly confused and looking for the cat in their car. So there's the pairing right on cue. All right, so let's move along. So we had Rich and Pam, or anything else you wanted to add about Rich and Pam before we move on?
That's one of those kind of like, huge If you have the opportunity of training with them, you absolutely should do that.
Yeah, agreed. All right, so I think next on the list was my trip to the UK. So we don't need to belabor what I did, but if you want to just kind of add any context about what you found different about how I teach, obviously, I mean, I was heavily influenced by Rich at the beginning of my career and influenced by Rory Miller later on, so that's kind of cool as well that we're going to round that out. But yeah, so what was your take on the couple of days? Well, not just a couple of days we spent in seminar, but also a couple of weeks in conversation.
Yeah, it was really, I mean, it was great to have that opportunity to have those extra conversations in my shitty van, driving backwards and forwards across, Stonehenge and Portsmouth Shipyard, etc. All good. As you know, we had developed a good rapport through contacts that we'd had in and around managing violence, but also because we did a couple of online seminars as well during the pandemic, which I thought were absolutely fantastic and were obviously a major reason why I wanted to get you to the UK and for us to be able to do some instructor training. We had a lovely group of instructors. Chris brought tons of people from GMA. We had a really good take up from lots of people that wanted to learn from you, which was very cool. I think the strengths that you bring to it as a very experienced teacher was that clarity and the way that you break everything down in a very structured way makes it very accessible. And your own experiences, obviously, not just the door experiences, but what I would consider to be the broader experiences working in mental health, for example, were extremely valuable. And for me, some of the most important stuff I got out of that, apart from your amazing graphics, were some excellent ways of teaching target hardening, which are so useful to me and what I do. Working with autistic children. So particularly, I mean, the way that you've been informed by Ellis Amder's stuff. So looking at timelines of emotions, for example, anger into rage, trigger points, de-escalation points, having a clearer, more scientific understanding of the kind of physiology of meltdowns and that kind of thing has been not only useful to me, but stuff that I've been able to use for distressed parents, because I think there's a major area that is so hugely overlooked is parents having to protect themselves from their children who have to express themselves through violent behavior. For me, being able to understand and empathize with those parents and help them find ways of managing that behavior of a child that they love desperately, that may be like hitting their other children or hitting them or being a danger to themselves. I'm slightly deviating from the exact content of what you were talking about, but that's just some of the ways in which it's gone on to have a domino effect on some of the other stuff that I do. A huge strength in terms of like corporate and workplace violence management, obviously, because that's such a big part of what you do, but very applicable in lots of other scenarios.
Cool. That's very kind of you to say. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to Tammy. So Tammy was the next one up. If you haven't listened to the interview I did with Tammy Yard McCracken, I guess last year, I would guess it was a while ago, but make sure you go back and listen to that. She is brilliant. She's so good. I'm a little bit jealous I'm a lot jealous that you've had a chance to train with her and I haven't, because I feel like even though I haven't trained face to face with Rory, I feel like I've talked to him enough and I've read all his works that I kind of feel like I almost have. Whereas with Tammy, I've only had the one conversation.
Yeah. So. Rory's just like, he's just like, I kind of don't even need to train you anyway. There are people out there that you can learn from that know the stuff that I know. And Rory's just extremely cool in that way. You absolutely should be jealous that I've had the opportunity of training with Tammy, and you should go do it because you'd like it a lot. I know you're busy though, but it's still a thing. So for those who don't know a lot about Tammy, the 500 Rising is a project that she has. And I feel for her in this sense, because it's a little bit like me with Fair Fight, that she had that kind of somebody should be doing something about this moment. And people around her went, yes, off you go. You should do it. But 500 Rising is really like moving along now. And one of the big strengths of the course that we did was her kind of second gen instructors coming through. So Tammy, obviously having been a student of Rory Miller herself, now like Rory Miller's the grandfather of these awesome instructors, Emmy and Lynn and Dan, that were helping out on our course and really taking significant proportions of it as well. So it's good to see that development in what's happening, that it's not just about one person, it's always about legacy. But what's specific about the 500 Rising material is that its focus on women's self-defense is unapologetic, uncompromising, and absolute. The commitment to really seeking out and explaining, like, neuroscientifically, biologically, the differences between men and women and why we respond in different ways. And that's a really big thing for me. And it ties in with a lot of the research that I do outside of my field. Currently rereading Invisible Women, which is another awesome explanation of how the world is designed around men, and women are not just small men, and how that affects us in so many different ways. So the 500 Rising mission of, like, creating 500 instructors to make a wave of change was a stupendous experience. I loved the interaction of the hard and soft skills. So it's one of the most physical courses that I've done, which it was really interesting. And it was incredibly clever how the hard skills were a vehicle for the soft skills. And the big focus on, you know, even if you are a woman training to teach women self-defense, or whether you're a man here to teach women self-defense, you are not your students. And that was such a big principle of the course, and that your students are not going to have your confidence. They're not going to have, you know, some of them will, of course, but for the most part, they're not going to feel that they can do what you do. And so using the hard skills as a way of building empowering behaviors and body language was just brilliant. And I felt that it worked really well. And I know that it worked really well because I then went out and tried it on various different demographics in my groups, in my teaching in India. And so I kind of had a range of different workshops from last year's workshops. Like, I was this time, literally this day last year, I was teaching soft skills in India. And then I went back again in October, and the improvement and the way that I've refined the material to work much better in the context and for the demographic that I'm serving has been heavily influenced by all of these courses, of course.
It's such a good point you make about you are not your student. I think that's something that all instructors need to be reminded of on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm thinking about, without saying too much, a client that we took over at a corporate level, who had a previous instructor for a number of years, and we were retraining all these people every 2 years. They had to repeat the training. They're coming back and getting a different take on it. And the amount of people that came through that course and said, oh my God, the last guy, all he would tell us is about all the things he could do. And none of us felt like we could do any of it. So we actually left feeling less empowered than what we were beforehand. Yeah. And so I've made a point now when I'm teaching this group to always tell them, it doesn't matter what I can do. It's what I can get you to do by the end of this session. And that's really the only thing that matters is what skills can I give you that you can walk away with and feel comfortable that you could use immediately. Because anything other than that is fluff, right? It's just entertainment value. If I'm demonstrating stuff, you're never going to be able to learn in the time frame you've got to learn it. The other thing I think, and I'd be a little bit of a deviation of what we're talking about, but it just came to mind as we're talking. I know for a number of years, I actually resisted teaching women self-defense purely because I didn't think anything I could do would be believable. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know how to teach.
I can see that.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I'm looking, like, at my smallest, I was 6'3" and 115 kilograms, right? I was way bigger than conceivably any woman that I was ever trained. And I was a martial artist and I was a powerlifter and I was all these things. And, like, I thought, how, even if I know the stuff works, even after like I was a Senshido instructor and I could do the shredder and I knew that stuff would work for anybody.
Yeah.
How do I have any credibility talking to a person who's less than half my size about how they could defend themselves? Like, it just doesn't make sense. So I didn't teach women self-defense until I was literally coerced into doing it by a group that really wanted me to train them. And then I started to realize that, I think that's part of where I started moving really hard into soft skills. I thought that stuff doesn't matter how big you are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's stuff I can talk about because logically it makes sense. So you don't have to convince them physically that these techniques will work for them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's an interesting take on it. And I think that's, I've gone back and forth over the years about whether women's self-defense should always be taught by women. Mm-hmm. But I think that like we need men to be teaching as well, because there's just not enough women to teach at the moment. And I know 500 Rising is looking to address that, but how we do that in tandem, how we do that in a way that is keeping the students first and foremost is a really big challenge we have to stay focused on.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the real strengths of 500 Rising for sure, because it's extremely inclusive of men as instructors, and it's very clear on like the pitfalls. So, and there's some really good stuff on like pitfalls as a martial artist, or pitfalls as a man, pitfalls as a strong woman, or whatever. You have that understanding that there's that constant kind of circling back to, here's another way in which you are not your student. Which I think is particularly good. The other thing that I think is helpful, well, there's so many things that are helpful about that course. Those biological breakdowns are key. Understanding the way in which the kind of the thinking, the verbalizing, the multitasking, all of the, some of the stuff that we talked about a little bit, if you remember when we did male-female differences on your course, but so kind of similar, but very much more in depth, given Tammy's background, etc. But I want to mention a couple of things. One is about establishing your moral position, because as Tammy would say, you can't make those decisions when you're under amygdala hijack. And so for a lot of people that come into that kind of class, they would say, I would never hit somebody in self-defense. I would not be able to do that. And a lot of martial arts type self-defense instructors would just dismiss that and go, well, you have to, but unpicking and discussing those moral considerations so that people have got their headquarters established in advance of anything happening to them is key and valuable. And another thing is going through, it's as kind of a post-Rory thing, affordances. It's given me loads of really good material to play with my students. This is not necessarily a chair, it's a weapon in multiple ways, or it's the other. In one of our, we have little community discussions within the karate classes, and one of their favorite ones at the moment is so let's think of three things that we can do with a sock other than, wear it. To get them to think laterally on different objects that surround them, because obviously if in a crisis self-defense situation, looking for those equalizers is really important. So thinking inventively about the things that are around you in a habitual way, I think, is a good mindset.
Yeah, very, very cool. Very cool. All right, let's jump over to Rory and your experience training with the one and only Mr. Rory Miller, who I don't want to speak this into existence if it's not the case, but I think Rory might have mentioned that this is kind of a retirement tour, or the retirement years of his last few times around before he's going to hand over to his other instructors. So I am, again, very jealous that you had a chance to jump on that bandwagon. I'm hoping he gets back to Australia, or else I'm going to have to fly somewhere again, and it's very expensive. But tell me about your experience training with Rory.
So that was very surreal, absolutely surreal. So and you're right, he loves teaching, but he hates traveling, and I get that. It may or may not be the last time that he comes to teach, certainly in the UK. So I feel very fortunate to have grabbed that opportunity. I'd wanted to train with Rory for a really long time. And before the pandemic, I'd booked a 3-day course with him, which was scheduled for April or May 2020. So you can imagine how well that went. And I thought that that was my opportunity gone. So when I had a phone call out of the blue from Self-Defense Global saying, would I be interested in hosting Rory at my dojo? I mean, yeah, that's probably the fastest I've ever said yes to anything. Because just for the sheer opportunity of getting to meet the man. Of course, you know, he didn't disappoint. He's Rory Miller. He taught a fantastic session, which was based on, it was a jukebox kind of thing. I wasn't sure if he would, you know, he didn't turn up with any, you know, he had a plan. He had three plans. He didn't know which of his three plans he was going to implement. It was going to depend on who was there and what they wanted to do. And we voted for none of the plans, which we just kind of went with, let's just ask him a question. And we've got 6 hours, so let's ask him a question and then he'll teach to that question. And then when we've sucked that question dry, somebody else will ask a question and then we'll go with that. So we had the most eclectic selection of hard and soft skills. Luckily, we had a whiteboard. It was in a school hall. So there was some kind of chalk and talk stuff, which I then had to clean the board very carefully before the school kids came in on the Monday morning, because it was, some of it was definitely not suitable for the teens. There was, you know, very specific technical stuff. There was a lot of, there was just all sorts. And it was just, yeah. So if you provide the man with enough black coffee, he will just go indefinitely. He didn't realize that, you know, people needed a lunch break and everybody was like on their knees at one point. And we were just like, Rory, you have to pause for a second before everybody dies. And okay. And then, you know, once people had had a chance to have a snack and then, it was very cool.
Very cool. I'm going to put you on the spot now. I'm going to ask you to give me your top one or two takeaways from each of those four sessions we just talked about. So what are your, if you were to flip back and go on, these are the absolute highlights for me. Top one or two points in brief.
Wow, you massively suck, don't you? That's really me. Okay, so let's go backwards. From Rory, it's hard to pick one, but I was particularly very nerdily interested in some of the power generation stuff. Because I've been rereading might not have been Meditations. I can't remember which one. I had been rereading something that was very relevant to that, and I got to ask that question kind of very fresh. We had Tommy Joe there as well, which was interesting because it connected with some of the stuff that I'd been doing with Tommy Joe earlier in the year too. So that was a very martial artist-y, technical power gen kind of thing that I particularly enjoyed. And that sounds like a very small and unimportant thing to have taken from Rory Miller. So I feel like shit now. But anyway.
Next time Jim Armstrong's over in the UK, I need to hook you guys up because Jim's power generation stuff is the best I've ever seen. And I think you guys would get along really well as well. So I'll make sure I'll make that happen next time you guys are both in the same country. All right, cool. And I think it's fair. I mean, at this point, like, most of us have read all of Rory's material. So it's going to be those little quirky things that you're like, oh, I haven't ever thought about that. Yeah. It's going to be probably the standout thing. So,
And let's be clear, that's like from Rory in that seminar, not from Rory across time.
Of course, yeah.
Which would definitely be aspects of ConCom, which I could go on about indefinitely, but that would be a different thing entirely. In Tammy's, you said one thing and I'm going to ignore that and do two because I can't. The one is permission to use more hard skills in my soft skills seminars, which I have found like a hugely enlightening and valuable and effective and really good for engagement. So that's been very powerful. But the depth of the breakdown into male and female differences, that was huge. and incredibly useful, daily life useful, which of course good self-protection education should be about daily life, not just about the the crisis in the moment. So those things there. And then circling back to you, I'm going to go with the target hardening, which is so useful in every context, very accessible, and people just get it straight away. And that's one of those ones that I've taken some time to translate into Hindi so I can explain it properly, not through a translator, and really kind of, because people will then pick it up and they can use it to make themselves safer straight away. And that's gold. And then there's
that's very, very cool. You might be the first person to ever teach any of my stuff in Hindi. I think if I've got any Hindi speaking listeners out there that have been taking my stuff, that'd be awesome. Just let me know. But that actually makes me smile. So
Good. Right. Very bad Hindi. Just like, you know, let's be clear about that. Very wonky.
Better than mine. It's better than mine. All right. So Rich and Pam to conclude.
Rich and Pam to conclude. So, although obviously they come as a pair, I treat them differently and respect them hugely in as individuals inside of that team. So with Pam, it's that, why the fuck should we have to make people uncomfortable? In like, our control of the environment should be about the benefit of the people that are there. So having specific, this is something that I battle with schools, and Christopher and I battle with schools on. If people need to step out, fucking let them step out. And it's about allowing people to access themselves inside of your session and not have to repress things in order to be there, because that's ridiculous. And that's a whole big thing, but that's briefly, that's really important. And that's one of my, of many takeaways from Pam. And then, Rich. He's such a humble person and so incredibly skillful. And that can be intimidating because you think, I cannot be that man. And he's like, oh, I'm not that man. And I'm like, no. But you actually, at a deep level, he really is that man. And I love that about him. But for him, that the complete destruction of ego in self-defense is a him thing. And that goes back to what I was saying before about social violence being 10 out of 10 de-escalatable. Because at what point when you're having that conversation with somebody do you rub up against the fact that it's their ego that is saying no to that? When you get Rich to tell you the Apple story, you kind of really get the whole depth of the journey that he personally has been on in managing his ego and his trauma and everything else. And you just go, okay, it is possible, but it takes a level of self-awareness, which comes from a lot of difficult experience worked through in a very courageous way.
Yep, agreed. Now I said we're gonna finish at 45 minutes, but we've just gone 45 minutes, and I have one more question to ask you. So I think we'll go as long as we need to. But circle back. We've talked a lot about these great instructors that you've learned from, but I don't think we've given really due credit to the work you've been doing this year as well, especially with your recent trip to India. So perhaps we can just talk a little bit about what you've been doing with Fair Fight and what you continue to do with Fair Fight in India, and also what Fair Fight does in other countries as well.
Bless you. That's kind of you to give me the opportunity of having that conversation. Followers of your podcast have been really amazing in their interest and support of what we do. Our belief is that if you equip women with powerful skills, then that's a good thing, particularly in countries where women are significantly disempowered. I project manage in India, and since we last recorded the pod, then I've conducted two project visits and a range of different workshops over there. I found one of the things that we also espouse is the value of education, and the two main self-defense workshops that I did this time. One was in the slums of Lucknow, where I was training a group of potential instructors, kind of from scratch. Some of them more experienced, but some of them absolutely with no experience whatsoever. From they themselves, girls from the poorest of backgrounds, who'd had very little educational opportunity, many of whom had had to, battle very restricted parents in order to get there. And that was a very challenging demographic to work with. And we just to get them to articulate, and again, the 500 Rising material was great for this as well. Building their confidence, allowing them to find their voices, that was incredible. We made a lot of progress, but it was really interesting to contrast that with the other group that we worked with, who are from, they're bored, they're very, very poor, but have been in education for a much longer period of time. They kind of, they get taken from their families because otherwise these girls are not given the time that they need to study. They're always like kind of redeployed into household work. Like the difference between like in primary education, they stay at home. And then in the secondary part of this, which is Project Marlowe, it's a great NGO that we work with, the girls board and the academic results of the girls uptake once they're taken out of their homes, like hugely, because they actually get the opportunity of studying, which the boys get to do kind of all along. Anyway, their ability to access the material was so much better, and their internal confidence so much more. And this is like my kind of little project of trying to prepare these girls for university, because they have the ability and the skills to go there. But harassment is such a major problem at local universities. There's a massive dropout rate, and a lot of women fall into prostitution as a way of supporting themselves. And it's, it's a very difficult and challenging environment for a young girl in the city. So particularly as these girls have come out of the villages. Anyway, so that was a really big thing. Our core project there, it was my karate girls that we've been working with for such a long time, and seeing them grow up and growing in their confidence and supporting each other as a group, and the way that their physical prowess and strength pays off in their support of each other and in their confidence overall is really great to see. And then you asked about what's happening in, we've had a new dojo open in Zambia, which is being headed up by one of the most badass women in Zambia, Martha. She's fourth Dan, and she's phenomenal. And she's doing some incredible work there with the new Fair Fight Dojo, as well as our other girls in Zim. So yeah, it's very cool.
Very, very cool. Well, Mary, it is always a pleasure to catch up and talk about what you're up to, and also just to take the cheat sheet of some of the notes that you took over an incredible year of learning. And if I can live vicariously through you and steal your notes, then I certainly will. So thank you very much for sharing with all our listeners. And also, if anyone happens to be close by, make sure you check out Athena School of Karate. Which is Mary's dojo for kids and adults, and also Violence Prevention and Management UK as well. If you're a UK institution and you think you could benefit from some of what we've spoken about on this particular episode, so thank you very much, Mary. It's been a great pleasure, and hopefully my audio sounds good on this one, and we don't have to do it a third time because it's gonna be really hard to make it organic if we have to have a third conversation.
Thank you very much for having me, Joe.
All right. Thank you. And you have a wonderful Christmas and New Year.
And you.
You've been listening to another episode of the Managing Violence Podcast. Make sure you check out our catalogue at www.violencepod.com for more interviews with the world's leading experts in violence prevention, threat assessment, and personal security. If you'd like to support the work I do on the show, please visit www.violencepod.com/support. And if you're interested in booking me or my team to provide training, workshops, or consultation on violence prevention and management, you can visit violencepod.com/training. I look forward to you joining us on the next episode of the Managing Violence Podcast. Until then, stay safe and stay dangerous.